Hello, and welcome to Medi-Call, episode 187. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo!
Daryl's back, everybody.
Coming back to you live from my new basement in Baltimore.
All right, back in Baltimore.
Yep. First day working for Johns Hopkins was today. It was good.
Yeah, first day working from home. But that's an interesting way to start a new job, isn't it?
Yeah, it was weird because, like, they told me that they were going to get me all my information by Friday, mm-hmm. and they didn't, but my boss emailed me on Sunday. Oops. But she put it in my Johns Hopkins email, which I didn't have access to until, like, 9 o'clock because I had to email someone to get my user ID so that I could log into my email. And then I looked at Doofus because at, like, 8 o'clock I emailed my boss and said I hadn't heard from her. And she's like, oh, yeah, it's in your email, but I attached it here. And then I got into my Hopkins email and saw she sent it Sunday. So, yeah, it was just an interesting calamity of occurrences. They have to move, and their IT department is like 20 minutes away from my house. And I asked them, can I come pick it up? And they're like, no, it's not essential travel. We'll just ship it to you via UPS. Oh my God. They're going to mail my laptop for 3 days instead of letting me drive 20 minutes to go pick it up. Yeah. But
well, I'm glad you made it down there safely and the family's all at least beginning to settle in. I know it takes time to settle into a new house, but, is the weather holding up for you guys at least?
Oh, the weather's garbage. We had a horrifying rainstorm.
No.
Days ago, it was so bad that it blew apart our old wooden fence.
Oh, God.
I guess it's old. I don't know if it's old. We've only been here a week, but our wooden fence. One of my neighbors came by today and was like, hey, I'm going to fix it because I have two really big dogs. And I know you guys aren't like ignoring this fence and you're trying to get settled in because we just saw you move in last week. So I'll just fix the fence.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah. So they fixed
your neighbors.
Yeah, they fixed the fence. And another one of our neighbors has like some old shed roof that fell off their shed. They're going to come and clean it up out of our yard when they get a dumpster to clean up their yard. So we've met most of our neighbors. They're nice people, you know.
Cool. Well, while you were gone, my friend John filled in for you, and we did a bit of experimental stuff going through some historic Brawl, and we talked quite a bit about the new set last week, but I'm excited to carry on with some Ikoria chat and actually put some picks down for our pick game. It's time. The whole set is spoiled. By the way, this is the second round of our new season of the picks game. We kind of lost track of the score, last time around. So we decided that Theros Beyond Death was going to be the mark of a new season. We're going to start fresh. I no longer am demolishing Daryl in points because we were 0-0 before this podcast. And we're going to find out who won the predictions for Theros. For those that are new to the podcast or unfamiliar with this game, with every new set, we go through the spoilers. We talk about the cards that we think are most worthy of talking about. It takes forever to go through the whole set otherwise. And we put our initials down for which cards we expect to see play in Pioneer or in Modern. And then between that set's full preview date and the preview date of the next set, we will see how often those cards appear in those published results and award points accordingly. So, we've got results.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I won. I haven't even looked at the results.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I won just because I was willing to buy in on Thassa's Oracle and Underworld Breach, and you were a large detractor.
Yeah, it usually doesn't take much to make the difference here, and you're absolutely right that you got me on Thassa's Oracle and Underworld Breach big time. But that said, before we get into it, we got to jump into our shill it out a little bit here first. So ManaTraders.com is our wonderful sponsor, and you can use the promo code ModernMedical, all one word, for 14% off your checkout. Your subscription price at checkout. Again, that's ModernMedical, all one word. It is a fantastic time to use that right now, while many of us are stuck in our homes. It's tough to play face to face Magic, but MTGO works just fine.
And you know, unfortunate part of the shill, if you were you know, perceptive enough to know that we were going to get locked in our houses for months on end, and that you weren't going to get to play Ikoria in paper first. After 3 months, you get first day access to Ikoria new cards. So unfortunately, our viewers that are signing up for the first time because they just heard their promo code today, they will have to wait a couple days to get access to the new cards. But if you've been with Mana Traders for 3 months, you have access to Ikoria right out the gate.
Yeah,
so,
loyalty bonus. I don't. That's not unique with this rental service. I know a lot of them take time to basically compile their stock on the new cards. So if you rent through Card Hoarder as well, I'm sure that you're dealing with many of the same delays.
No surprises, but Ikoria, I think they usually have stock within like the first weeks, and they kind of release it to the general public. So you'll be able to get your Ikoria fix after that first week, but we'll see how much of it we think will affect the formats we know and love.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap up our Theros Beyond Death spoilers. I'm going to just rattle through them real quick here. We went by color. We decided on Modern or Pioneer for these cards, and if they showed up in published results between the time that we put these picks down and today, they are worth 2 points in either main deck or sideboard. Doesn't matter. If they did not show up and we predicted that they would, we get -1 point, a little penalty point. If they showed up in like 1, 2, or only 3 deck lists, I gave us 0. So it could just be like one person that played your card and it would be enough to save you that loss point. But that certainly doesn't count as being played, quote unquote, in that format. So we had quite a few of those situations.
All right.
So the first one, and I'm going to talk about some of our whiffs too. In fact, the first one is a whiff. So Allseed of Life's Bounty is the 1-mana enchantment creature that can sacrifice to give an enchanted creature or enchantment protection from a color of your choice, and it has lifelink. That one actually sees a lot of play in Pioneer Orzhov Auras, and neither of us picked that one. So no penalty for that one, but we missed out on 2 points. We both picked Birth of Miletus for Pioneer. That was worth 2 points for each of us. We both picked Daxos, Blessed by the Sun, for Modern and Pioneer, thinking that would be in Soul Sisters and Modern. It was not, but it was in Pioneer quite a bit. It's in the mono-white devotion decks, so that is net 1 point for both of us, still even. We both missed on Elspeth Conqueror's Death. That one sees play pretty consistently as a 1 or 2 of in mono-white devotion in Pioneer. It's a very good card. Elspeth Sun's Nemesis sees some play in Modern and Pioneer, so we both got 4 points for that. We both picked both. Heliod Suncrown, no surprise, Modern and Pioneer, also worth 4 points each. Heliod's Intervention, we both picked Pioneer, and we were both right. There's tons of that in mono-white sideboards. Daryl picked Omen of the Sun, which is the token Omen, and that one did not see play in more than 2 decks, so that's a 0. It does not count as negative points, but showed up on some very brief occasions. We both picked Shatter of the Sky, which is the Wrath of God, pseudo-wrath in Pioneer. And it's in a lot of the mono-white sideboards. Not a lot of main deck play, though. So that one is worth 2 points as well. All right, moving on to blue. Daryl picked Ashiok's Erasure, which is the 4-mana kind of pseudo-counter Ixalan binding type of thing. And that was a good pick because it is seeing play in mono-blues. Mono blue decks as well as blue white sideboards. I picked Kiora, Best of the Sea God, which is the 7-mana saga. Not a ton of play, but it is in some of the mono green ramp decks as the big payoffs. They're not actually mono green ramp if they're playing this blue card, but that's a 0-pointer for me. Not enough. What's that?
I'm surprised you even got out of the hole on that one. I didn't think that card.
I think that's kind of what I expected it to see some minor play as a payoff in some of those decks, just because it's so powerful at what it does. It's so unique, but there's so many choices for big splashy payoff cards that it doesn't have to just be an enchantment in that case. Yeah. We both picked Omen of the Sea for Pioneer and Modern, and we were both right. That's seeing play in a lot of Jeskai Fires decks in Pioneer and just a bunch of random places in Modern. Thassa Deep Dwelling. Daryl picked that one for Pioneer, and that is worth 2 points. However, that one is seeing play in Modern Soul Herder quite a bit as well, so that would have been worth 2 points had you picked that one.
Yeah, I was pretty embarrassed by that because it's the first time I tried it in Soul Herder. I was like, well, I missed 2 points because this card's gas.
Yeah, that's your deck, man.
Well, the thing is, when we were doing this, I wasn't playing Aladmeri's Call. And I was playing I didn't know where to go because I was playing Once Upon a Time as my, like, way to cheat on lands and, like, have bullet creatures.
Yeah.
And so I didn't think Aladmeri's Call was going to be good enough. And then I started the Aladmeri's Call version and I tossed that in. I'm like, oh, yep, this is too good. Like,
yeah, it's pretty damn strong. It can take over like crazy in some of the standard decks that it appears in. That combined with the 7-mana gain control of a permanent thing, it's just game over.
Yeah, that card's really dumb.
Agent of Treachery, that's what it's called. Next on the list, still in blue, Thassa's Intervention is the X blue-blue spell. We both picked that for Pioneer. We were both right. It's a fantastic card. Okay, this one's a little embarrassing. Thassa's Oracle, we both picked for Pioneer. However, I did not pick it for Modern like you did. And it turns out it's a pretty common win condition. A lot of Modern combo decks. Sidereal gets 4, I get 2. Thirst for Meaning is the Thirst for Knowledge, but for enchantments. We both picked for Pioneer. We were both right. Whirlwind Denial is the counter spells and activated abilities unless or and triggered abilities. I don't know. Abilities, I think it is, just in general.
Yeah, counter spell plus unless they pay 4.
Yep, unless they pay 4. We both picked that one for Pioneer and Modern. And I'm still pretty high on this card, though it didn't see a ton of play in Modern. There are only a couple of decks that had it in the sideboard. I think it's still kind of undiscovered, or maybe it's just not the right time for it, but I think it's going to see play in you know for a long time in Modern. But that said, just 2 decks didn't count. That's 0. So total of 2 for each of us for its Pioneer appearances.
It's not the right time for it because until busted blue-green cards gets banned, like it's not really going to have space.
Yeah. I wonder, though, if like the rise of Tron again, Tron seems to be coming back. If Ulamog necessitates some kind of reasonable answer to exile on the cast trigger, I hate dealing with that guy.
Reasonable.
Moving on to black, Agonizing Remorse is the discard spell. We both picked it for Pioneer. We were both right. Sees a lot of play in the Mono Black Devotion. Cling to Dust. Daryl did not pick. I picked for Modern and Pioneer. This is the one that exiles a card from the graveyard, and I think it's like if it's a creature, you gain 1 life, and it also has Escape.
If it's a creature, you gain 3 life. If it's a non-creature, you draw a card. It has Escape 4 for 3 and a black. I'm very intimately acquainted with this card from playing Canadian Highlander, and as soon as I casted it for the first time in Canadian Highlander, I knew I had just like made an egregious mistake because like it's just very good in Canadian Highlander. It took over a lot of games. Because the games would go if the games went long at all, you'd always fill your graveyard up, and then you could just like delve away the nonsense and just use it as a cantrip. Like really, like the problem was is I didn't realize that it was literally just a cantrip that you could just flash back. I was looking at it as oh, this is only good if its graveyard hit is good, but really it's just a repeatable cantrip that also happens to interact with your opponent's graveyard.
Yeah, well, in formats that are grindy like Highlander, I can see more value in that, but. I think we're seeing more play with this one in Modern, honestly, than Pioneer. There's not a lot more incentive to play Graveyard Hate in Pioneer. I mean, there is plenty of reasons to do that, but Modern very much so. And a lot of the black-red mid-range decks were running it in the sideboard.
Absolutely.
So that was a 4-point swing for me there. I made up some ground on that one. Daryl picked Eat to Extinction, which is the 4-mana XL. It's kind of like the Vraska's Contempt, but it can mill a card from the top of your library. And that was worth 2 points because it's in Sultai Delirium quite a bit. Erebos's Intervention, Daryl picked for Modern and Pioneer. No points for Modern, just appeared in 2 decks, but in Pioneer it's in quite a bit of the Inverter decks. We both picked Mire Triton for Pioneer, which I had to look that one up. That's the 2-mana, 2/1 with Death Touch that mills. And that shows up in Pioneer and Grixis Control decks as like a 2 or 3 of. Good blocker. Gives you some value. Myers Grasp. Now I'm trying to remember what Myers Grasp even is. Oh, it's the 1 in a black enchantment that gives -3/-3 or +3/-3 or something like that. I don't know.
It's that 2-mana that gives them extra point of toughness.
Yeah, I picked that one for Pioneer. 0 points. Only 2 Orzhov Enchantress decks had it in the sideboard, but it's out there. Nightmare Shepherd, we both picked in Pioneer. Only 2 decks had that one. 0 points for that. Though one of them, I put a link in here because it was pretty damn cool. It was, it's kind of like a Dimir Inverter, Prime Speaker Vanifar hybrid deck. It's crazy. It's like a, it's got the Dimir Inverter, Thassa's Oracle combo, but it's also got a ton of singleton creatures because the Prime Speaker Vanifar tutor engine alongside Eldritch Evolution allows you to pinpoint your silver bullets and combo pieces. So it's pretty cool stuff. Even a Renegade Rally are in there. Real fun.
Oh.
We both picked Treacherous Blessing for Pioneer, and it is, in fact, seeing play in white-black enchantments. White-black enchantment control, that is, not the Enchantress version, though. Timuret, chosen from Death, the mono-black dude. Daryl picked... I picked for Pioneer, and that was worth 2 points. It's in mono-black devotion. Woe Strider. We both picked for Pioneer. I picked Woe Strider in Modern as well, and that was worth 0 points. However, it did show up in a Witch's Oven deck in Modern, so that saved me the minus one. same with the Crow in War. Moving on to Red. A Crow in War I picked for Pioneer. It says C. I think I typed that wrong. That's 0 points because that only showed up in a deck. It was like a blue-red aggro deck.
Yeah.
Ox of Agonis is a no-brainer. We both picked it for both formats. That one should be worth 4. I typed that wrong. Doesn't matter because we both got the points. Phoenix of Ash. Daryl picked for Modern and Pioneer. I picked for Pioneer. It did not see enough play in Modern to count for points, but it did in Pioneer, and it is a two-pointer for... It's a singleton in the red, chonky red decks.
Sure.
Okay, I don't know if I count this as a whiff, but we did not say anything about Storm Herald, and I guess there is a Storm Herald deck. It's kind of a Saffron Olive special, but it's a mono-red hollow one with Storm Herald Eldrazi Conscriptions, and I've seen quite a bit of it online, so it's definitely out there.
We definitely talked about this guy. We just said that, like, there wasn't enough redundancy to Eldrazi Conscription to be able to, like, make this be a deck.
Yeah, the Storm Herald deck is pretty terrible. It when it goes off, it's very good, but
yeah our concern was with the redundancy to Eldrazi Conscription not being there, and so, like, people are doing it because it's budget and that's cool and I respect it, but, like, I don't think there's much to talk about here.
Storm's Wrath, I was surprised on. That was the 4-mana, 4 damage to creatures and planeswalkers. We both picked for Modern and Pioneer, and it really saw minor play in both formats, so we got 0 points for it. But I'm really kind of shocked by that. I thought that card was kind of a shoe-in for a lot of, at least Pioneer strategies.
Yeah, Red X, Gold X, I thought, yeah.
Yeah. Embarrassingly, the only one that picked Underworld Breach was Daryl, and only in Modern. So I think that one would be worth 4 points had we picked it in both formats. But I did not say anything about that one. I was kind of trying to ride my hot take of this card is overhyped. But
hold on, I have to look for it in Pioneer now, because if you know,
we're pretty positive it's in Pioneer.
I mean, I'll look while you continue reciting point things.
All right, the last one for Red was Daryl threw in a last minute edition Furious Rise, which is like this 3-mana red uncommon that draws you cards. Based on it's like I don't know, Fia Ferocious or something. Something like
yeah.
that. That was minus one. That did not show up anywhere. Going on to green. In green, the Binding of the Titans I picked for Pioneer. That saw some minor play, not worth any points. Dryad of the Elysian Grove we both picked for Modern, and that's obviously worth 2 points. That was probably the most impactful card in the entire set for Modern. Setessan Champion we both picked for Pioneer, 2 points each. And Setessan Petitioners, that's the Devotion to Green, Gain Life. We both picked for Pioneer. Lots of sideboard play and green devotion.
Yeah. On our idiocy for not picking Underworld Breach for Pioneer, the Lotus Breach combo deck.
Yeah. Oops. You okay?
Yeah. That's that one up. Like.
Yeah, you just cut out for a second. But yeah, Lotus Breach combo deck definitely has that as a win condition.
Yep.
Absolutely. Moving on to gold, we have Ashiok Nightmare Muse. We both picked for Pioneer. We were right. Kallax Destiny's Hand. That's the Enchantment Planeswalker. Daryl picked for Pioneer. He was right. That's in Green White Enchantress. It's a good card.
Yeah.
Both picked Dream Trawler for Pioneer. Absolutely right. That one even showed up in Modern quite a bit.
I'm surprised.
Galia of the Endless Dance is the Satyr guy with haste. We both picked for both formats, and we were right about that one. That one showed up exactly where we expected in those green-red aggro decks. 4 points. Clothis, God of Destiny, we picked for both formats. Correct, again, 4 points each. Kunoros, Hound of Aetherios, that's the lifelinker Cerberus. Both picked for both formats. This is seeing a ton of modern sideboard play in Death and Taxes decks. Pelucranos Unchained, this one's another wash. We both picked it for Pioneer. We were both right. Staggering Insight. Now, this is the Curiosity with Lifelink. We both picked it for both formats. There was only one deck in Modern that played it, but there were quite a few in Spirits decks, Blue-White Spirits and Pioneer. So it's worth 2 there, 0 for Modern.
It's a good sign we're covering for Spirits, yeah.
This last one we talked about a bit, and I don't know that we were as high on it as we should have been. However, we were wise to pick it in both formats. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, turned out to be pretty impactful.
Yeah.
4 points.
He's legacy play in numbers because of Arkham's Astrolabe. Like, yeah, this card is real dumb. And it became
the poster child of Modern for a little while.
Just so strong. Unbelievable.
All right. So moving on then to artifacts. We're almost done here. We both picked Shadow Spear for Pioneer, and that one is showing up pretty consistently in blue, red, and Soul decks and some other places as well. Soul Guide Lantern we picked for both formats, and we were correct. That is a very commonly played sideboard card in Modern and Pioneer. And last but not least, Labyrinth of Skophos we picked for Pioneer. We were wrong. Didn't show up at all. Card's pretty bad, I guess.
Yep.
All right, Daryl, you won. 89-82. You won pretty handily, too.
Nice. Well done by me.
So we're starting off fresh, 1-0. Daryl's in the lead.
I'm going to
Ikoria.
And then I'm going to get really aggressive and lose like 19-2 or whatever.
Yeah, this is how it starts. You get confident, get cocky.
Yeah.
All right. So as we do, we're going to start at the top and we're going to get through as much as we can today. I won't say what the plan is because we're going to play it by ear. We're going to go for an hour and crash through as many of these monocolored collections as we can. However, I think we're gonna spend a lot of time in the golden hybrid. That's where the bulk of the good cards are in Ikoria.
Yeah, that's gonna be where the game time is, I think.
All right, you ready to start?
I am ready to rock and roll.
All right, in white, this guy. I think we're gonna start with some discussion already. Draenith, Magistrate, 1W for a human wizard. It is a rare. It is a 1/3, and it says your opponents can't cast spells from anywhere other than their hands. Daryl, you go first.
I mean, this is playable, ? Like, it has applications. Like, you're not going to look at this card and go, that card doesn't really do anything in these formats. Mm-hmm. Like, Snapcaster Mage, Eero, various different things like that, all relevant magic cards in those formats, in their applicable formats. So, like, this card does stuff. Does it do enough stuff to warrant inclusion in a Death and Taxes deck? So, my answer is no. I don't think this will see play because we got Angry Puppy, right? Like, this does the same thing as Angry Puppy.
What are you referring to when you say Angry Puppy?
Kurthros, like the thing that we just talked about.
The gold, the white-black... colorless
guy? Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, what does that guy say exactly? Is it cards or is it just creatures for him?
If it's creatures, then we're talking something different. But if it's like cards, then let me look it up real quick.
What is it called? Kurnos? Kranos, Hound of Aetherios. So it is, players can't cast spells from graveyards. Yeah.
So, like, this affects decks. So, like... Mm-hmm.
Cascade.
From exile and from decks. So my question is, like, how many of the decks that would play this are also not in black to play Kurthros as well? That's my... Where I just see, like, yeah, this effect is good, but I would rather play Angry Puppy because it's bigger and it has keywords on it.
Cascade is a thing. The only card I can think of with Cascade, I guess there are a few. Bloodbraid Elf, right? But then there's also the Living End decks. They cascade into a spell. But when it comes to graveyards, like, all right, Uro and Conflagrate is a big one. Underworld Breach.
And it will see play.
Yeah.
But it's playable and it will see play, but I'm not going to buy it. Like, that's literally where I'm at. is like, I know that this is probably going to score 2 points in one of these two formats, and I'm not going to buy it for either of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm tempted. It's a human, so that's worth noting. I think humans against Dredge probably is interested in this guy because Conflagrate is like the one card that can just blow them out. But I guess Tragic, was it not Tragic Slip, but the -1/-1 is pretty good against humans too. I don't know. It's probably not good enough. Those sideboards are pretty tight already.
Yeah, like that's the thing is like I think this is a totally playable sideboard card, and if we didn't already have like two or three different ways to already do this, I would think this is going to make it in. So like my brain is like you should buy it just because of the logic of it's playable, but like I just don't think it's good enough.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to pass on this too. One last point on this one is if you were a humans deck, would you rather play this guy or just play Kurinos even though it's not on tribe?
Kurinos, because I mean, yeah, that's a good question. I might play this guy.
The fact that we're debating it though means that like they're pretty close, and we're not seeing Kurinos in any human decks currently, which to me says it's probably not gonna happen for this guy. And I don't think there's any reason to Pioneer.
So is Kurinos better than the white black death and taxes decks playing this guy? Like, are there mono white death and taxes decks that are like, I don't want to splash for Kurinos, but I'm gonna play that guy?
Yeah, one turn earlier is pretty relevant though, so that's worth considering.
I'm not going to buy it, and I'm going to totally be willing to eat crow if it's worth 4 points.
You know what? I'm going to put my initial – I'm going to do this one for Modern. Not for Pioneer. I'm going to do this one for Modern. I changed my mind just so we have a difference here. I think that it's worth the risk. All right. Moving on. Lava Brink Venturer is 2 and a white for a 3/3. Another human. Human Soldier. It's a rare. When it enters the battlefield, choose odd or even. Lava Brink Venturer, seems like it should be Adventurer, but whatever, has protection from each converted mana cost of the chosen value.
I mean, I'm going to buy this for both formats. This is just a very good aggressive creature for white decks.
Yeah. I almost feel like in Modern you choose Odd because you've got Path and Bolt, and in Pioneer everything seems to be a turn slower, so you choose Even, right?
So here's the reason why there is like some ability to discuss for Modern what you pick is because if you're playing this in a deck with Stoneforge Mystic, you can't put any of your equipment on it.
Yeah, wow.
If you pick Odd, you can't equip it with Swords, you can't equip it with Batterskull.
Yeah.
So true. Like that is a non-zero thing, but yes, all of the good removal in Modern is one CMC. So like turning it off and just picking Odd and saying, okay, what do you have that is big enough to block this thing other than Tarmogoyf. Like, nothing. Okay, cool. So, like, against Jund, you can just pick Even, and it's unblockable, but it dies to all the removal. Or you can pick Odd, and it, like, loses to the creatures. But, like, you know, so there's, like, some thought process behind how you handle it. But I think this is just playable in both formats. It's a good, aggressive, like, 3/3 for 3 is a good body, and the ability is very strong.
Yeah, yeah. And 3 mana is worth considering too because Teferi, Time Raveler cannot target this if you choose Odd. So ooh, that's pretty relevant. I don't know, man. I think I'm gonna pick this one because I don't see a world where people aren't trying it out, but I don't think it's gonna be what you expect it to be. It's definitely not a true name nemesis. It might have some light sideboard application in Modern. I think it's definitely gonna see play in Pioneer. But I'm not too big on it in Modern. It's a little too narrow. Okay, the next one, Luminous Broodmoth, is a mythic. 2 white-white for a 3/4 flying insect. When a creature you control without flying dies, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a flying counter on it.
This card is playable in Modern 100, or Pioneer 100%. Just because I watched like a standard Mardu sacrifice deck trying to do things with this, and it was completely broken.
Yeah.
Like, this will see Pioneer play 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Modern play, the question becomes, is it better than how we already do this otherwise? It's better than the Null Mage Shepherd that we bought last time. So I'm buying it because it's just better than Null Mage Shepherd.
For Modern?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the whatever the big dumb flying 4/4 is. Did I buy that thing in Modern? Trying to be consistent.
Yeah, yeah, we did. Both of us.
Okay, well, I'm going to buy it for both of renting, because this thing is better than that big, dumb flying thing.
Yeah.
Because you get to keep the creature in your graveyard, and it comes back with full stats, and it has flying. So, like, it's just totally relevant to, like, oh, by the way, you can just have your Kitchen Finks back. If you choose not to persist it, you have it back as a 3-2 flyer, and then it dies and gets a persist counter, comes back without a flying counter, and then he comes back with a flying counter, and it's a 3-2 again. So, like, that's an infinite loop with Kitchen Finks in white. Because you get to pick how it comes back. You stack triggers.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, it does that effect more effectively with Kitchen Finks. And it's, so it's, like, a good top end, but Rian is better in just, like, green-black. So it's, like, this card definitely fits because you can loop stuff with it. Just a matter of what decks you want to play it in.
Yeah, I agree. There's stuff going on with this in Solemnity, too. I think Solemnity is a pretty terrible card, but there might be something there with, like, a black-white, Garalf's Messenger, Luminous Broodmoth, Solemnity. There's enough redundancy now that might be a thing. Sure. But I'm more interested in it as just a value engine for Abzan toolbox decks, and I think it's very good at that. Similar to Shalai in that it's a 4-mana 3/4 flyer, so stat wise it's a pretty aggressive creature and an excellent flying blocker in Modern. And similar to Shalai in that it protects your other creatures, while it itself is like the one thing that's vulnerable. So I think that's cool. I think you can get more value out of this guy initially than you can with Shalai, because you have the opportunity to like sacrifice things to your own Viscera Seer and like get some extra ETB triggers from those things. You already mentioned the Kitchen Finks. I like that a lot. You can cycle through a Kitchen Finks a couple extra times with this one. So that's fun.
You can just do it infinitely.
Can you?
All right. Let me explain it, because I figured it out on the fly here.
Yeah.
So Kitchen Finks is a 3-2 in play.
Mm-hmm.
Sacrifice Kitchen Finks, there are two triggers. There's a Broodmother trigger and a Kitchen Finks Persist trigger. Put Persist on the bottom and Broodmother on the top. It comes back as a 3-2 flyer. You sack it again. It goes to the graveyard. Kitchen Finks is the Persist. It comes back as a 2-1 without flying. You sack it. The Broodmother triggers comes back as a 3-2 flyer. And so you can loop it like that.
Yeah, so the Broodmoth trigger is on the stack while you're sacrificing it, so it never gets the flying counter.
No. You're doing it – well, I mean, it works initially, either way.
Right.
And actually, you get both triggers. You get – because it's a 3-2, you just sacrifice it.
Yeah.
You get Persist trigger and Broodmoth trigger on the stack. You can pick whichever one you want. I just tend to want to bring it back as a 3-2 flyer so that it can attack if you don't have, like, the loop engine.
Mm-hmm.
But – then it dies as a 3-2 flyer. You don't get a Broodmoth trigger because it had a flying counter, but it gets the Persist trigger, so it comes back as a 2-1. And then it dies again. You don't get a Persist trigger, but you get a Broodmoth trigger. It comes back as a 3-2 flyer.
Mm, yeah.
And back and forth.
Yeah, that works well. Yeah, I mean, there's something there. I think we've seen a lot more stuff that encourages us to go back towards like the Kitchen Finks version of that deck, Heliod among them, you know. I almost have enough to do just black-white, too, you know? Like,
you can legitimately cut the green because you have two engines for Kitchen Finks.
Yeah.
You could do it with – you could also do it with – if you played the Blood Artists, you could do it with Blood Artists, the – what's the stupid red cap and Heliod?
Mm-hmm.
Like, nine, you get a counter, you get a gain of life, you put a counter on your red cap, you can have it shock itself so that it dies, and then you can keep looping the red cap and draining your opponent out with Blood Artist. So that's another functional strategy you have there.
All right, let's move on to the next one. We got two more white cards. Oh, by the way, I am picking this in both formats too. I don't know if I made that clear. You said you were as well.
It was pretty clear.
Yeah, the Mythos of Snapdax is up next. This is the white Mythos in the cycle. It is 2 white-white. Each player chooses an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker from among the non-land permanents they control, then sacrifices the rest. If black-red was spent to cast this spell, you choose the permanents for each player instead.
Okay, so I'm 100% thinking that this will see play in Modern. Or not Modern, Pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is this good enough to see Modern play? Because I know there will be Mardu Pioneer decks that crop up that kind of already exist, but will have a real reason to be Mardu now.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, can you create a situation where you make literally white, white, black, red in Modern, and it matters? Is Mardu Pyromancer enough of a thing, or does this make Mardu Pyromancer enough of a thing that you are playing this as your Mardu Pyromancer payoff?
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Like, this would come out of the sideboard, right?
Yeah. If it's playable, it comes out of the sideboard. So the question is it good enough to come out of the sideboard?
At 4 mana, it's got to, completely hose a deck that's a tough matchup for you. And I don't know what that is. I don't think that there is one. Getting everything but a Planeswalker. Like, usually they've only got one Planeswalker. That clause is pretty irrelevant here. It's wrathing the creatures or wrathing the artifacts that I think is the most relevant to Modern. And, Affinity is not really a deal. And even if it is, Mardu Pyromancer should stomp Affinity with all the removal they've got.
Yeah.
So I don't like this one for Modern.
Urza?
Yeah, that's a point. Urza.
Well, no, does Mardu Pyromancer struggle against Urza?
I don't know. I think everyone struggles against Urza. The deck just seems to have an edge against every other deck.
With the Mythos, you can leave them with a Karnstruct and nothing else.
Yeah, because you can choose the Karnstruct as the artifact and the creature.
Yep, and it eats all their creatures and it eats all their astrolabes and stuff laying about.
Yeah.
So that is something you could do. But, is that enough to warrant this to be your sideboard? I think the answer is no.
You know what you could do with this is you could play a Forbidden Orchard deck and use that to generate the right color mana for this thing and then leave them with the 1/1 token that you're creating for them.
Yeah. I mean, again, is that enough of an incentive to play this?
No, I don't think so. I'll pick it in... I don't even want this one in Pioneer, honestly. So I'll let you have this one in Pioneer. But I'm going to pass on this. I do like the card. I just don't think there's the right home for it right now.
That makes sense.
The last one in white that I've got, and feel free to add more, is Swallowed Whole. This is a weird one. It is 1 white for a sorcery. Has an additional cost to cast the spell, tap an untapped creature you control. It says exile target tapped creature. Put a +1/+1 counter on the creature tapped to pay this spell's additional cost.
So... it's close. It's really, really close. It needs to be an instant before I even start considering it to be a thing. But if it was an instant, it would be playable in exactly Pioneer.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking here. That format is really starved for a 1-mana removal spell. And this exiles, which is super relevant.
Yeah. I just think that, the decks that actually want this are the control decks, but they don't have creatures. You're depending on your, Elspeth or what's the stupid 2-mana thing that Hero makes...
Precinct 1?
No, that makes the 0-4 wall, the one that we reviewed.
Birth of Miletus. Yeah, that or... Well, Hero gets played in Pioneer as well. Either one.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're dependent on that, so this is actually really a turn 3, 3-mana removal spell.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't I just play a Detention Sphere?
Yeah, I don't think... I think it's a little too conditional, but it's getting closer. This is part of the experiment in how do we make a balanced Pioneer 1-mana removal spell? And I don't think this is quite it yet, but it's interesting that, the fact that you can put a +1/+1 counter on a creature is pretty cool. If you're in mono white and you've got a Walking Ballista, that's an X equals one. And you need that second counter to go infinite eventually. That's the way to do it.
There you go. That's a use for it. I don't think it's enough by its on its own merit to play in mono white, but it's close. I'm not gonna buy it, but if that's an instant, I might that you might be able to convince me that they'll see play in the mono white deck.
All right, well, let's move on to blue. Sounds like we're both passing on that one.
Blue. All right,
Escape Protocol is the first one I have on the list for blue, and Escape Protocol is the enchantment that is the Astral Slide. It is 1 in a blue for an uncommon. It says whenever you cycle a card, you may pay 1. When you do, exile target artifact or creature you control, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control. Now, so we've got a lot of cycling legal in Pioneer. I don't think this sees play in Modern. I think we can get that out of the question right now, right?
Unfortunately, this doesn't see play in Modern. Yeah.
But Pioneer, is there enough cycling that makes this worthwhile?
Is Amonkhet in Pioneer?
Amonkhet's in Pioneer, and so is Zendikar. Zendikar's in Pioneer.
So my thought is, like, we are really, like, so the thing that you really needed to get the cycling deck going is, like, you need Astral Slide. But, like, the problem is in some of the cycling decks that you might play in Pioneer, you don't really want Astral Slide. Well, you want exactly Astral Slide, and this isn't Astral Slide.
Yeah, so the, like, fact that you have to pay for it.
Well, no, the fact is you can't target your opponent's stuff. Astral Slide was so good because you could, like, fog your opponent with it. So, like, in Pioneer, if I'm playing a cycling deck, I'm playing the New Perspectives deck, and I'm trying to combo with, like, the two mana black card that returns all your cyclists to your hand, and you cycle for zero. And you cycle all the way through your deck, and you can kill them with Thassa's Oracle, or somehow. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
You make links with Drakehaven, or you have the black enchantment that drain lives them. And so, like, is this, like, what creatures or artifacts have to be in your deck is the question you have to ask yourself to make this worthwhile. And my answer is, unfortunately, it's like 5-mana artifacts. Because you need artifacts that make a pile of mana so that, like, you can cycle your things and slide out your artifact and it comes back untapped and you can make mana off of it and you slide it out and it comes back untapped. Like, that's the kind of stuff you need in your deck to, like, make this go. So, like, how is the cycling set up in such a way that we could have, like, exactly Gilded Lotus start sliding in and out? And the answer is we don't have a Gilded Lotus.
Yeah, I think we got to pass on this one.
Yeah, so we have to pass the thing for both of us. So, like, in Modern, you're getting, like, very close to, if there was some fair magic happening,
yeah,
you'd be pretty close to a Bant or four-color cycling deck because you play Astral Slides, you could play creatures that get your stuff back, and you're getting somewhere. But, like, until Modern becomes a lot fairer, Astral Slide decks are not going to be a thing.
Yeah, I want this to be a thing. We have now redundancy in Modern with Astral Drift and Escape Protocol, but it's just, I mean, Soul Herder does it better. And
yeah.
I don't think we need to be diluting our deck with non-creatures just to make the Soul Herder effect go when we can just be, like, purely, like, all value enters the battlefield, triggers creatures, and get it out of our Soul Herder itself. So,
try to make it happen when it's not going to happen.
Yeah, not interested. The next one is Mythos of Illuna, which is the blue Mythos, of course. This was the last one to be spoiled, and I think a lot of people were disappointed in this one because it's not a counterspell and doesn't draw cards. It is 2 blue-blue for a sorcery. It says, create a token that's a copy of target permanent. If red-green was spent to cast this spell, instead create a token that's a copy of that permanent, except the token has, when this permanent enters the battlefield, if it's a creature, it fights up to one target creature you don't control.
So, the red-green part really bugs me. Because, like, that feels like a really lazy thing that they tacked on. So, like, I think the effect itself... So, like, let me make this clear. It's not playable. But I want to talk about the card because I think the card's cool.
Yeah.
The 2 blue-blue copy a permanent effect is very good. So, like, maybe it's playable in Lotus Breach because you need a second Breach or second Lotus field. Then, okay, sure. You might convince me that that's a thing you could do in this deck. But, like, if that second effect was, like, make a second copy or do some other thing, like, this card would be, like, it's really cool. But, like, the really lame, if it's a creature, fight the thing, that's pretty lazy and pretty weak.
Yeah, I think this one's underrated, honestly, because it is extremely powerful. Like, copying a permanent could mean a planeswalker, and I'm sure that's occurred to many people that read this card. However, the fact that you can get a powerful creature and then remove another creature with one card, that's a pretty significant 2-for-1. And
yeah,
it's worth considering, but I don't think that the deck is there to house it in either format. So I think I've got to pass on it, but I think if there's some kind of, like, mid-range teamer deck. I don't even know what it looks like. This would be a consideration.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. Next up is Neutralize, and it's right next to it. It's one blue for an instant. It's an uncommon, and it says counter target spell. So it's a cancel, but it has cycling two. Is cycling enough to make cancel playable?
I mean, it's playable in Modern, or not Modern Pioneer for sure. Like, yeah. People play cancels as is. They play Absorb. They play Disallow. Like, people are playing cancels. They play Dissolve.
But like, is it better than Absorb?
I think it's not better than Absorb or Disallow, but better than Dissolve and Dissipate.
How many 3-mana counter spells are you going to play?
I've seen people, so like most people play like 2 to 4 Absorb, and then they play like some secondary counter spell.
Yeah.
Like, they don't play the full 4 Absorb. And so here's the thing though, if Pioneer kind of moves away from aggressive decks, and I haven't played Pioneer in a while because it's been moving, so I don't really know.
Yeah.
But not a whole bunch of aggressive decks in Pioneer, like Neutralize all of a sudden becomes the best in counter spell, because it's a counter spell that when you're behind, you can cycle away to try and dig for Wrath.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, so I mean, there's some flexibility. Because oftentimes what will happen, even in those against those aggressive decks, they'll put a couple things on the board and they'll just stop playing spells.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Orb isn't going to get anything, get you anywhere. It's not going to time walk. So, like, cycling to try and find Spring Break just becomes better at that point. So, I mean, it's Pioneer playable. I'm going to buy it. People will put it in to their extra counterspell slot because it's like.
Yeah, I can see the extra counterspell slot like as a one of or something. I think Pioneer decks rely on Absorb so much because the opposite problem is true. Like, those decks don't need more cards that can just cycle in the late game. They need cards that can do shit before turn 4 so that you don't die. And so gaining 3 life keeps you alive with Absorb. Neutralize is like, okay, I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to be thinking, okay, I need to counter something to stay alive on turn 3 so I can get to my 4-mana Wrath spell on turn 4. And then that one time out of 10, you're going to be like, oh, thank God I can cycle this counter spell. This is not what I want to draw right now. What are you saying that in the late game? Counter spell is all-encompassing. Like, if you're digging for a threat, that's a different story, but I don't know. I'm very confused about this one. I think it's cool, and it's definitely a good improvement to the 3-mana cancel variations, but I don't see this one seeing play in Pioneer with the exception of, like, maybe a one of and, like, a Grixis control deck or something that wants to put in the graveyard so you can get a Torrential Gearhulk later on and utilize it that way. I don't know.
Hey, I'm buying it, and not super high, but high on it.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on it for that reason. I think that it's a little too narrow. Of One Mind is up next. This is a common. 2 and a blue for a sorcery. It costs 2 less to cast. If you control a human and a non-human creature, draw 2 cards. The reason I bring this one up is there's a lot of talk about this one in Modern with Delver decks. Could this be the replacement Treasure Cruise for a Delver deck? Delver itself is a human. When it flips into Insectile Aberration, it is not a human. You can also play Young Pyromancers.
You have to have 2 creatures.
You have to have 2 creatures. Yeah, it's pretty tough.
Yeah. Like, no, this isn't playable because you have to have 2 creatures. So, like, if you're not a human that's also got another non-human type as both, then, yeah, this would be insane. Because you just play, like, a human wizard or whatever and then, like, play this and draw 2 cards. Like, if you could play Bob.
I don't think that works because it says a non-human. A human wizard is still a human. So that does not count as a non-human.
I understand that. That's why I'm saying if you could, this card would be playable. But as in its current iteration, keeping 2 creatures on the board is
insane.
Yeah. 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 Having 2 creatures on the board is hard.
Yeah. And the payoff is only 2 cards. If it were 3 cards, we'd be talking. But then 3 mana for draw 3 is significantly good in its own right. So I guess the comparison to like Treasure Cruise is where I'm at with that. And this does not, check those boxes for me either. That said, we have Mutavault in Pioneer, so there's some consideration there. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of all of the cards in the set that require humans and non-humans. There's a lot of stuff that does something that says, like, if you have a non-human, you get to do something with a human. It's like anti-tribal. It's very strange.
Standard.
Yeah, I think so.
Or but limited. It's not modern, yeah.
Okay, pass. So Ominous Seas is up next. This one's sweet. This is an uncommon. It's one in a blue. It says, whenever you draw a card, put a foreshadow counter on Ominous Seas. Remove 8 foreshadow counters from Ominous Seas to create an 8/8 blue Kraken token, and it has cycling too. Notably, you do not have to sacrifice Ominous Seas to do it, so it can be a Kraken engine if you so choose.
It's 8 counters is so, so many counters.
There's a lot of counters.
Like, think about it. I play this on turn 2. I'm going to give you the best case scenario. I play this on turn 2. On turn 3, I put a counter on it. I play Teferi. I bounce something. I put a counter on it. I draw for turn 4. My opponent does nothing. I cast Hieroglyphic Illumination. It's got 5 counters. On turn 5, I play Teferi number 5. I draw a card. 7 counters. Turn 6, I can finally make a Kraken. Finally. And then they fatal push.
And they fatal push it. Yeah, it turns on their removal. So it's not something that you want as like your one creature in the main deck. But perhaps it's like a one of or a two of in the sideboards. And if you're going to be playing the grindy, like all in control the board style, like this could be like your inevitable win condition.
This is good in the control mirrors because you just put it in play on turn 2 and like hanging out, like eventually gets you to kill them. But like, is this sideboard card enough? Like, it's only good in control versus control. Because, like, in my mono blue tempo deck, I don't want to draw 8 cards. I want to kill you.
Yeah, it does. Teferi can just bounce this, right?
Yes, it's an enchantment.
And, just reset it. So in the control mirrors, it's not even that great. It gives Teferi something to do. I'm wondering if this is like in a combo deck that just like draws a bunch of cards. Is this some way to like go off and win with like infinite Krakens?
I mean, you'd have to take an extra turn though. So like,
yeah, you would.
It seems not good. Like, it's a cool card. It's cool for like Eternal formats and like Highlander formats. I just don't think it's playable in main formats.
Okay, last one. Elspeth. Or not Elspeth, but Narset Windfall decks. How about that?
No. But you've already played Narset and Windfall. You win.
But this is like if you don't have the Narset and then you play the Windfall, whatever the variant is, you've got other ways to form that redundancy.
Sure. If you want to play it, but like, you just try and win the game, man.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to pick it for Pioneer just because I want to live dangerously, and I think this card's too cool to like pass on. I think it encourages some really interesting brewing. It's probably not great. You're probably right about that, but I'm going to take a risk.
All right. I have 2 more cards I want to talk about.
Yeah, I've got 3 more on my list. But
okay, I don't remember looking at your list because I've walked away from the list and I'm scrolling now. So.
All right, Pouncing Shark, is that one?
That is not one of them, but I'll look
at Shark. Okay, Pouncing Shark looks like a Street Shark. You remember those guys? Street Sharks. Yeah. It's an uncommon. It's 4 and a blue for a 4/3 Shark Beast, and it has Mutate. 3 and a blue for the Mutate. It also has Flash. It says, whenever this creature mutates, you may return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand. It's obviously not modern playable, but is this good in Pioneer? It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
You got to give me a minute, because I'm still trying to wrap my fucking head around the tail. Sorry, swear words. I've read like 3 articles on it, and I still don't understand it.
So let me put it this way. Read the text, but I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay.
When you mutate the card, you put this either on top or below the creature that you're mutating.
Correct.
The creature becomes a combination of both cards. The card that is the topmost card is the one that represents the power and toughness. But the abilities of both parts are present. So this could either make the creature that's attacking into a 4/3. It can make a creature that's blocking into a 4/3. It's got Flash, and it could bounce something else. Or it could just improve something that has higher base power and toughness.
Hold on, though. I have to ask a question because this is where you use. So Dark Confidant's a terrible example because it's not a human, because it's a human. But just play along with me. If I mutate the thing onto a Dark Confidant,
yes,
and I put it on top,
yeah,
is it a 4/3
that bounced their guy and then also gives me a Bob trigger.
Yes.
Okay. This is what I was having trouble understanding.
Yeah. So you've converted that Dark Confidant into a much stronger Dark Confidant.
Okay. So this is what I was having trouble understanding, if I put creatures on top or on bottom. Okay. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good now.
The mutate is really, it's really confusing. And generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of like a card that only is effective if you have another creature on the battlefield. It seems like a terrible top deck, because when it doesn't mutate, it's just a flash 4/3 for 5 mana. And it seems really shady.
You can't get 2-for-1s though, because if you mutate and they kill the thing it's mutating onto, it still comes to play as a creature.
Right.
So you can't,
right.
can't get 2-for-1, which is huge. So that, you know, having a creature to mutate onto and then just them trying to kill it makes us cheaper. I mean, they can still 2-for-1 you by waiting until the trigger resolves, yes, and then you kill that creature and then the mutate thing dies.
Right. But then okay. Your trigger at least.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not like Bestow in the way that the creature falls off and then becomes a creature of its own, but it is like Bestow in that if they kill the creature you're targeting, you still get the dude.
Okay. So
I don't know. I think
it's playable as a 4/3 that like this could be just like Blue Giant Growth that bounces another one of their guys. And that's a lot of tempo. Yeah, you could have like a crappy 1/1 that turns into a 4/3.
Oh, yes, Giant Growth. I'm sorry. Go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So like in your blue tempo deck, you have like some crappy 1/1 flyer that you start the game with, like Pteramander or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you just like drop this dude on top of Pteramander, bounce one of their things, and kill the thing that's blocking Pteramander.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like a 2-for-1, right?
Yeah. And then you have a 4/3 that evolves into like a 7/6 or whatever, some dumb, big, large number.
Well, they don't combine stats, though. It would be a 4/3.
So it's a 4/3 that has Pteramander's adaptability that becomes like a 7/6 when you adapt it.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
There you go. So, yeah. Like, this could work very well in these, like, blue tempo decks. So I like it. Like, I'm going to buy it for Pioneer. It's not modern playable because it's 4 mana.
Oh, yeah. Definitely not modern playable. I think it's, like, probably the most interesting a monocolored mutate creature. There's not a whole lot out there. And again, this is a hard to evaluate ability, but when, like I said, yeah. Whenever something requires that you have a creature on the battlefield, I'm a little hesitant. I'm a little wary about it, but this one is like a 1 or 2 of in some decks. It's a really good combat trick.
Yeah.
I just wish it could target your own stuff.
Oh, bounce your own creatures. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Bounce your own creatures. Okay. Going on then, Shark Typhoon. This is also known as Sharknado.
You skipped 2 things I want to talk about. So can we
let's circle back. Go ahead. Reconnaissance Mission. Is that what you want to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Biden of Fossa was definitely a card we played. And so, like, this is Biden of Fossa that when Biden of Fossa is bad, it cycles.
Yeah.
Like, I think playable Pioneer.
Okay. I could see it. But does Biden of Fossa see play in any of the mono blue devotion decks?
Actually, I don't know.
I don't think it does. But that said, the other ability on Biden of Thassa wasn't used very often. It's definitely good, but it wasn't a big deal. So for this to have cycling and not be legendary also.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe relevant. The question is just like, do we have enough with like all the curiosity effects that we already have access to in those types of decks? Like we're already playing whatever that curiosity is that gives them +1/+1.
So you actually just talked me out of both of these cards then, in all honesty.
Okay.
Played so many curiosity effects that this probably isn't good. And I was going to talk about Sea Dasher Octopus because, like, it's another curiosity.
Yeah.
A 2-mana curiosity. It's also a 2/2 flash.
Yeah, with
that
flash.
Has, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I thought that would be good enough, but, like, both of those things, you just talked me out of it.
I do like Sea Dasher Octopus, though, because I think that flash is really super relevant.
Yeah. Like
the fact that it can flash. Just be a creature. It can be a flash creature. You know, like end of your turn, drop in a 2/2 and start, you know, start chugging away.
Yeah, doing some birds. I think I'm actually still going to buy Sea Dasher Octopus for Pioneer, but not for Modern.
Okay. Yeah, I was very close to putting that on the list, but I probably should have. I'm glad we're talking about it. So you got it for Pioneer. I'm not going to buy it for Pioneer, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does see play in Pioneer. I think it's a good card.
All right, Sharknado.
Yeah, Sharknado. Here we go. Five and a blue for an enchantment. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, create an XX blue shark creature token with flying, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. I mean, that's very good. That's a very typical, like, flashy six mana enchantment.
Okay, literally a Sharknado. Oh, it's so blown away.
Literally Sharknado. It also has cycling X1 blue. When you cycle Sharknado, Shark Typhoon, create an XX blue shark creature token with flying.
This feels like something I want to be doing in Pioneer, but, like, it's not good enough. Like, this card, I'm glad you called it out because it's cool and I want it, but it's not good enough. Even though it says non-creature spell, so, like, it triggers on your planeswalkers. Like, even though it does all these things, not good enough.
You don't like it as, like, a one of?
So, here's the thing. So, like, you have two options. You have, like, run your big, dumb six-mana spell into a counterspell against the blue decks, or have a six-mana counterspell against, like, the, like, generic aggressive decks. Like, it's best in mid-range matchups. And in the situations where, you need to cycle it, it's like a four-mana 2/2 against aggro, and you're never cycling this against control. Like, if it was make a bunch of X11 sharks that fly against control, then, yeah, you'd play this thing, and you'd cycle it and make five sharks, and then attack with your flyers. But makes one big
You're not gonna cycle it against control?
No, because it only makes one shark that gets bounced by Teferi or removed by a D-sphere. Like, it's one target. Like, if it made if it went wide with a bunch of small sharks, I would cycle it.
Alright, you're overlooking something. This is not a cast. Here's the thing. This is line of play that's so debilitating for players against Teferis. Once they can tap out for Teferi, because once it resolves, there's nothing that your opponent can do to interact with Teferi, and you pretty much can, like, secure its safety. However, if they tap out for Teferi and something else, doesn't even matter what, and you're, like, pondering, they're like, no, just remember, you can't do anything. You're like, actually, I can. I can cycle my Sharknado, and I can hit you with a 4/4 flyer that's going to take your Teferi down.
Right. So if they bounce with Teferi and you cycle Sharknado on turn three, like, your turn three, you pass, you don't have a counterspell, and they play Teferi and bounce, draw, and leave it at one, you can cycle the Sharknado and kill the Teferi. But, like, I still don't think this is good enough.
I'm just saying, like, it's a thing you can do against them. Obviously, you play it because the six mana enchantment is, like, super powerful. But if you're not getting up to six, like, cycling this for X equals two, get a 2/2 flyer, draws a card. I mean, that's like a Mull Drifter, right? It's a bad Mull Drifter, but it's a Mull Drifter. It's got flying.
Bad Mull Drifter. I'm not. You can buy it if you want.
All right, I'm in. I want it for Pioneer. I like this card.
We're jumping in the Sharknado. You got it.
Plus, it's a meme. Like, people are going to try it. I think we're going to... It's going to be forced, if nothing else.
Sure. All right. I guess we got one shark coming out of the Sharknado. You want to talk about the Voracious Great Shark?
Yeah, this is the last one for today. Voracious Great Shark, while we're on the topic of sharks. 3 blue for a rare. It's a shark. It's a 5/4 with flash. When it enters the battlefield, counter target artifact or creature spell. What's not to like about this guy?
I mean, we're buying this for Pioneer. This is 100% Pioneer playable.
Yes, of course.
0% Modern playable. Like, I don't think we need to say anymore. Like, we did it.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Counters just about everything you'd want to counter, except for Planeswalkers, which is minorly problematic. However, you can just kill a Planeswalker with this guy. Five damage is a lot.
Instants and sorceries are problematic. But, like, in a world where instants and sorceries don't matter, like, if they're thought seizing you, you just flash in your shark. If they play a dude you don't like, you flash in your shark. If they play an artifact you don't like, you flash in your shark. If they have a planeswalker, you just flash in your shark. Like, mm-hmm. So, like, that kind of covers the gambit of everything you do with the shark. And it's just a very well-statted body at its cost.
Yeah.
Like,
five
mana, 5/4 flash, fine. So, yeah, this is good.
It's just hilarious to me that this card, which is going to see a hell of a lot of standard play, is a damn shark. And I think a meme is going to grow very old.
Yeah, too many sharks.
But once again, this is comparable to Torrential Gearhawk in Pioneer. However, I think the fact that it costs one mana less is significant there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not as flexible, which is going to kind of be a knock on it, but you can only play so many of these 5 and 6 mana spells. But I definitely think people will play this 100%. I think it might get edged out by Gearhawk just because of Gearhawk's flexibility. But this doesn't stand alone well, where if people are disrupting your graveyard, if you haven't drawn the right mix of spells, you can still eat a creature or eat two creatures, even like eat a creature and then block. So, but yeah, no, that, I think we've said enough on the giant shark.
Yeah, that's important. What you just said though, with if your graveyard is empty, this is way better than Torrential Gearhulk, and that's pretty common. Like if you haven't found your absorb, obviously absorb is the dream with Torrential Gearhulk in Pioneer. But if you haven't found it, or if it's been exiled, then this guy's just better, hands down.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So there we go. We're going to end on blue today. There's a lot more to talk about. We're going to jump right into black, red, and we can probably knock out black, red, and green next week. And then we might be able to chug through the gold and artifact and land for the week after.
Yep. That's gonna be a sounds doozy. Good to me.
So, all right. Thanks for tuning in. I'm glad you made it to your destination safe, Daryl. And good luck setting up the homestead this week.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Cardnock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardnocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardnocklifepodcast@gmail.com.